My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
He's been bossy lately, telling us that we need to be on the details, but we really do for him to be the best player he needs to be. So what I mean by bossy is we don't hit something in practice. He's going to tell us how we need to run it, this, that, and we just look at him and be like, okay. Then when we get out there on the game, you just better make sure it works, because he's going to have some words for you if you don't. So that's him being a leader. And he's a little bossy. No, just a little bro, so.
That's what you want.
Yeah, you do want to see that. Like I said, he's like little bro, so you like looking at him like, dude, don't be talking to me like that. But it's but I understand, because we need to really connect on that. And that's what we did this past week. So I took his advice. I listened. You know what I'm saying? Older bro had to take a back seat for a second.
That to now be able to be bossy.
Bossy. Sounds a little sassy, you know what I mean?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, the bossy rookie.
Bossy, sassy,
yeah.
Comfy, all of the above.
Saucy.
That's Caleb Williams, five games into the season.
Sassy and saucy.
He can be sassy, he can be saucy, he can be both.
He can be bossy.
He's very good, and he's getting better. And you see that. The evolution of the communication and the rapport between those two especially has been obvious. DJ Moore having some fun. And it's not going to – nobody can kid us into thinking that it's all been smooth. We've seen bumps along the way. They've acknowledged it. And I think when you hear them talk openly about that, it's part of the process and the evolution of a leader who is also a rookie.
Well, I mean, they combined on a touchdown two games ago.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, they had two touchdowns. In the
yes.
game. This week, we expect them to connect for three touchdowns. The bye week, they will throw four. I mean, it's just all building and building and building.
Keep getting better and better and better. That's the idea. What happened with the Bears season, though, I think, when you look at, and I, this is projecting, but it wouldn't surprise me if this happens.
Okay.
What happened after the Colts game, a game where Caleb Williams threw for 363 yards, but he threw 52 times. Sacked four times.
56
I refer to it as a debacle, because losing that game was, to me, and the way that they neglected the game plan, and they called 60 pass plays. 60.
Yeah.
Four were sacks, four were scrambles, and then they hit through 52 times. That was coaching negligence. But what happened after that, I think, was a hard reset for the season or the offense. In the two games since, and I know this, you have to consider the Rams and the Panthers were the opponents, but Caleb Williams is 37 for 52. That's a 71% completion percentage, 461 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, and his passer rating over those two games is 117.5. That's the passer. That's the quarterback that is as advertised. I know the passer that completed and threw for 363 yards against the Colts was prolific, but he wasn't efficient. He was erratic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you look what's happened the last two games, that's the version of Caleb Williams you need to see moving forward. And I think that's the one they need to coach and make sure that they get by calling games that are responsible and reflect the running game emphasis on this football team that needs to maintain and continue.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a work in progress. It's far from perfect. I do believe if you could replay games, I think you'd be doing better. I think you'd have a chance to I think you'd have done better in the opener. I think you'd have a chance to win in Houston, and I think you would have been able to beat Indy. I'm just saying, as we're watching the offense kind of change and as we're watching the quarterback improve, But that's to be expected. That's how life works. So, you know, when by the time you get to the end of the year, you'll be like, oh, boy, you know, this is significantly better than it was when it started. And you hope that that's always going to be the case with the guy. But I'm sure there's a clunker out there somewhere for him. I'm sure there's going to be an uneven performance.
Sure.
Before it's all said and done.
No doubt about it.
That's the way these things actually operate. It is unusual that you usually it's incremental progress. It's just like a guy's getting better, and then all of a sudden you're like, wow, he really has gotten better. He's at a different level. It's not like you're climbing a ladder or climbing the stairs, which is what it looks like when you just look at the guy's statistics. And it shouldn't be that way. So I'm a little curious to see how the improvement will go this week. This is not a bad spot for them from a football perspective. In other words, you know, it's difficult to leave the country, difficult to go overseas, difficult to be playing in an environment you're not used to, strange to see cars on the other side of the roads. All that stuff is legitimately different than what you're used to. But from a football perspective, this is a game they can win.
Will they win?
Well, they're favored by 2 points.
They should win. By kickoff, it will be more, I imagine.
Here's hoping they win.
And the Jaguars are compromised with their travel. They're going to be affected by that, no doubt. Their minds may be elsewhere. They're going to be distracted by their families dealing with Hurricane Milton. And that's reality. And a couple of texters said, we're not minimizing this, the extent of the toll or the reality or the seriousness of a tropical storm or a hurricane or whatever you want to refer to it as. We're not trying to minimize that. We're talking about the football game implications. And they're going to play a football game.
That's right.
One way or another, they're going to play that.
Yeah, it's going to count in the standings.
When they do, and we're just saying that the Bears do have an advantage because of the understandable distractions that the Jaguars are dealing with. And so they're going to get to London for two games and for 2 weeks, and you wonder where their heads are going to be at. The Bears, meanwhile, have been there since Tuesday morning. So they should be acclimated. They should be adjusted. They should be all over all of those other travel obstacles they would have cleared already, so they can just play a football game with their focus where they want it to be, easier to focus than the Jaguars.
Are they staying in this Marriott property for the entire trip?
I'm not sure.
When do they go? When do they make the move back to London? Are they just going to drive
probably
to the stadium?
Probably the game.
They'll probably go closer.
I would think that would be typical, right?
Yeah, it would be.
Be typical so that they can eliminate any kind of travel obstacles on game day. But the offense, hopefully, regardless of where they're playing, wherever the venue is, that they are beginning to fall into a rhythm, establish some sort of identity. In short yardage, they are a team that wants to pound you. In situations like where you're trying to get things going, they'll go to no huddle, up tempo. They take advantage of the bossy QB because he is a guy that is good at directing traffic. It seems like he has a good command at the line of scrimmage. And when they go to no huddle, when they ask him to, you know, play with a little pace, I think he thrives on that. He seems to be better at that.
I agree. He does like pace. I'm curious. We don't know the entire injury report, but we do know that that Tevin Jenkins was called limited. Again, it was a walkthrough, but had it been a regular practice, he'd have been limited, unable to do all of the practicing, but certainly capable of doing some of the sessions. So, what do you read that? Read into that for me. If a guy is limited on Wednesday, that indicates he's going to play on Sunday and he's going to start the game.
At this point,
do you feel confident that he is going to be in the starting lineup? And do you feel confident he's going to finish the game?
Well, more confident that he'll start it than finish it because Tevin Jenkins has a problem doing that. He made the trip to London. He was limited on the injury report on a Wednesday. It's better than not participating at all if you project that out. So I would think that Tevin Jenkins, he played through rib pain. So this is the second injury that he's had this season so far. I think he'll probably start the game, whether he finishes it or not, or whether he rotates with Bill Murray at left guard because of some way to keep him, you know, healthier. I don't know what they're going to do, but I would be surprised. Now he made the trip and he's a participant in practice. I'd be surprised if he doesn't start. And they're better with him in there, because when he is healthy, when he's on the field, the efficiency of Tevin Jenkins is not in question as much as his durability. It's all about durability with him. It's not necessarily with performance. You can live with his performance, even though he'll have examples of getting beat. But I think that he's a guy you can win with, but he's a guy you need to be able to rely upon. And that's been the biggest problem with him.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. Bill Murray been in the league for 4 years. They moved him from defense to offense. Now he's with the Bears for his first season. You heard Flusi talk about him in training camp, that he was having a good camp, and then he gets an opportunity. And again, surprisingly, gets an opportunity. You thought that Nate Davis would be the guy that they would go to, but apparently he's just a backup now. Nate Davis making $10 million a year. It's sunk money. They've paid him the money. He's owed the money. He will get the money this year. I'd be hard-pressed to imagine a scenario in which he's on the team next year. He would have to change his fortunes pretty quickly. I mean, the guy is, let's be honest about it, he's like a third stringer right now.
Are you sure he's going to be on the team the rest of this year?
Well, I think he will, but because I think it's sunk cost. They've already paid him the money. They already know they owe him the money. So until
but guys like that are hard to have around.
But until they're, I mean, do we know that? I don't. I agree with what you're saying. A guy that
we don't know that.
Making more. But I mean, and I mean this sincerely. Is he a guy that is late getting on the bus? Is he a guy that doesn't care about practice and won't get? If he's on time for everything, and he's then I don't. I mean, he's a. Unfortunately, at this point, he's more a body than anything else, and he's just a guy filling out the roster. You don't get rid of people typically if you thought they had some value just because of all the injuries that do come up over the course of a season.
That's true, but we don't know because you can assume things. He's not playing it for reasons that are seemingly unrelated to his ability.
Yeah,
he's not getting the most out of his ability. And why is that?
Right.
It remains a mystery. So those guys are typically can be hard to have around if they're not playing and you don't want that to be a drain. You got a lot of positive vibes with the Bears, and football coaches are very conscious of the culture. You know, you talk about culture probably in every sport, but in football especially. So that culture, is it something that can do you want a player who is disgruntled? And Nate Davis not playing, maybe he's not disgruntled, maybe he's indifferent. But either way,
that's not a fun thing.
It's not a good thing to. It's not a good feeling to have a guy like that around. Everything else is going well for the Bears right now. They've got a lot of momentum. They've got a lot of enthusiasm. They win this game. They head into the bye week with a good feeling about their first six games. It's a big game for the Bears. You don't want anything to kind of kill the buzz.
Are you in any way hesitant over the fact that they haven't brought, you know, they got, when you bring someone back off IR, there is a 3-week window in which they are allowed to practice before you have to add them to the roster. So they have two offensive linemen that are ready to come off IR just in terms of timetable. Mm-hmm. You have to be on it for 4 weeks. And Ryan Bates and Larry Borum are both, they've done their 4 weeks. Neither guy has been cleared to begin practice, which would indicate that they're probably going to need more time. And when you think of that, does that mean, have you already concluded that if they were able to play in the Washington game, so they've got a game this week, then they're off for a week, and then they're playing Washington. If you've already concluded they're not able to play in the Washington game, and I don't know if you have or not, but they haven't started practicing yet, and you have 3 weeks in which you can practice, does that indicate to you that there won't be any changes to the offensive line in terms of either of those guys added to
the
roster?
Not necessarily. I think a lot depends maybe on what happens Sunday. Mm. Also, the off weeks, now they used to be practice heavy.
And now they're nothing.
No, they're nothing. Now they're basically built-in vacations.
That's all it is.
Where are you going to go? How are you going to get away? How are you going to spend your idle time?
Because you might have one extra day of practice.
It is idle, but you don't have a lot of extra time on the field, on the grass, as the coaches say. So I don't know if that's the time to revamp your offensive line. That said, what happens on Sunday will determine how aggressively they may want to make a change, or maybe how content they are with what they have already. Because if they have a good game, they can build off three straight victories, and maybe a solid running game emerges on Sunday against the Jaguars, whatever the case is. But I think it's premature to answer that question. If you have a healthy Ryan Bates, if you have a healthy Larry Borum, and you have injuries that you can plug and play, those guys maybe accelerate their progress. But the off week will give you more time to recover more than it will be kind of more time to rebuild.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think the off week, it's important for the coaches to go to work, to do all the self-scouting, to really sort of break everything down to its basics. And what is it that we're not getting out of this guy, that guy, et cetera, and then have a plan in place. What does this guy do best? How do we use him best? I think you have to go really back down to basics. I think the coaches need to put in some work. I'd be disappointed if they were taking a week off too.
Oh, I doubt they are.
I'm just saying, I think you can get done.
You can get a lot done. The off weeks have been good opportunities for coaches to kind of rethink their approach to the season based on what they have, you know, in the body of work, the six-game body of work in this case. Self-scouting is very important during off weeks. But I do wonder if when we look back at the season, as we kind of began the segment, that Colts game to me represents almost like a before and after. You know, before and after, because something got away from Shane Waldron that day. Something got away from the Bears that day. To call 60 pass plays is not who you want to be with a rookie quarterback, or really any quarterback. And so that may be as much of a, you know, when you talk about self-scouting, maybe they had that realization during that week in the aftermath of that loss, and they don't have to make as many drastic changes during the off week.
Well, and I understand that idea, but then I guess what my question would be is, was that a good thing that you had that happen because now you got it on track, or was that a terrible thing?
You lost the game.
That you had? That's what I'm saying.
You lost the game.
It's hard to go back and say that was a good thing.
No, I don't want to present it that way. That was maybe a necessary thing that they pivoted. Yeah. It's good that they did.
I'd like to do that after a win.
But shame on them for losing because they shouldn't have lost that game.
That's interesting. Okay. 312-644-6767. Do you feel the result would be different now if they were to go back? And isn't that the worst feeling you can have in an NFL season? If you think a game got away with you, got away from you, or a couple games got away from you, or you came into a year and you weren't ready to start the year. You know, they were 0-4. Before they won the game against the Niners, but they went 1-3, and now you went 1-2. I'm just saying. I mean, is it do you have to restart the engine? And that could just be a case of no practice, of not being able to hit, etc. But we'll talk about that too. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
2-1 to Lindor. Now the pitch. Swing and a drive towards the gap in right center. It's pretty deep. It's back near the wall. It's gone. It's gone. Francisco Lindor. He may have just outdone himself. He has hit a grand slam into the Phillies bullpen in right center field. The Mets are leading by a score of 4-1. They were famished for the big hit all night. And Francisco Lindor just provided a feast. Mets 4, Phillies 1 here in the sixth inning.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
That's a great call.
Wow.
Howie Rose, great call.
Yeah, it was great stuff.
Mets radio.
And it was It was really a hell of a game. And the Mets are on a heater like nobody. I mean, I guess you could say that Detroit's on a heater. Those are the two teams that kind of didn't. I mean, Detroit,
just
I think
wait.
They were like 0.02% to make the playoffs.
In August.
But
10 below. Were they 10 below 500?
They were 10 or 11 below.
And that was after the 101st game.
That's right.
It was right around the time they were in Chicago, early August. Not that it's coincidence or by design, but they place Javi Baez on the injured list. He has
a hip injury. Once they got rid of that bad penny, they took off.
They took off.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, I'm not attaching it to Javi's absence, but they did take off from there.
That strikeout.
It's been remarkable. It's been remarkable. Which is the better story? That's a good debate. The Tigers or the Mets? I'm not going to call them the Miracle Mets. That might not go over so well.
They paid a little too well to be miracles.
Or Cinderella.
They're not Cinderella.
Satin slippers. Not glass.
Listen, they're doing well, and they're very highly paid. And let's just
they're very highly paid. It's very luxurious.
The thing about Detroit is they're not. I don't even know if any of them get a check. I mean, they are. They're virtually
unpaid. They
get
room, board, tuition, and books.
Comparatively unpaid.
They do. They are. They're like, they have NIL deals because
exactly.
They seem like they're amateurs.
Yes.
And so they, with the $18.8 million payroll of their 26-man playoff roster, here they go, shutting out the Guardians yet again. And I don't know which is a better story. I have to say this. I historically hate the Mets, but I love the story. I love what they're doing this postseason.
You're a conflicted person.
I am a very conflicted person. Thank you for noticing. This postseason baseball is driving me crazy because the things that you typically root against are happening. Like, oh, this is wonderful.
You were so into this Philly story and look at all these guys and they're come together and they're going to. Did you see Castellanos with his kid there?
Oh, I know.
Melt your heart.
It's very conflicting.
Get out. It's very conflicting. Look at you.
Schwarber, I mean, he's Mr. October. He has the chance to add to his legend to enhance it. And
that would have been unbelievable.
Strikes out.
I told you. Dustin's head would have exploded. If that happened, I shudder to think. Oh, you have a hard enough time, even though Schwarber's like six teams removed or something, 15 teams. He's played pretty much
not
everywhere.
Not that long.
Oh,
he
yeah.
went to the Nationals, and he went to the Red Sox, and he went to the Phillies, but he's always going to be a Cub.
Teams
he's always going to be a Cub.
The reason why the Cubs won the World Series, Astro Madden.
Kyle Schwarber coming back. I don't think that's really.
What about the speech?
There are a lot of reasons. That's a big one. That's a big
Say,
one.
That's what.
Don't you remember the fascination and the intrigue and the drama? He was working out in Arizona,
hitting off like a left-handed
yes.
pitching machine, and
yes.
and facing curveballs
yes.
and all that jazz.
Then he took the flight.
He was putting balls like that landed on top of the park and just stuck there.
You can mock it all you want.
I'm not mocking
the legend of Kyle Schwarber lives on in Chicago, and that's what makes it so hard to see him thrive elsewhere, although you're very happy for the guy because he's a terrific guy. Character, he fits the perfect Cub. This is what you want.
You know what, though? I mean, I totally agree with you, and I have no problem following Kyle Schwarber and watching him, etc. But I just think that the Cubs were not the only team that gave up on him, right? And I think that it's difficult. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
It's difficult to look at him like, how could the Cubs have let him go? How could the Cubs have let him go? And then he was let go. And then how has he moved as much as he's moved would be a better question than strictly blaming it on the guy that won the World Series.
He was tradable, I suppose, if teams deemed him expendable. Dave Dombrowski thought that he would fit very well at the top of that lineup, and he has. Good for Kyle Schwarber. I look at what the Mets are doing, and they're where they are because of what happened against the Brewers. Pete Alonso, Oppo, came through with a big swing of the bat. It was the biggest swing of the season until what? Last night. Frankie Lindor, grand slam in the clutch. Their stars are performing like stars.
Frankie also had a big hit to get them past Atlanta.
Exactly.
Had a huge, I mean.
But the
so
point being.
Is Alonso going to hit the next home run?
Probably.
Okay.
Or it'll be Nimmo. Somebody who is a star caliber player playing the role. And the Cubs, what did we say all season long? They lack that guy. They lack that star power. They have a lot of very, very good players. They've got a Dansby Swanson, an Ian Happ, a Suzuki. They've got guys who are very good. They need greatness. They need greatness, but because what you see in these playoffs, with the Mets especially, is greatness coming through.
And I'm not arguing that, but how do you explain Detroit? That is the one that it's not greatness. It's like they have a big moment and you quickly look up the guy's name and where was he and what's his and
well,
how much is he making.
That's the White Sox model. Okay. I'm telling you, listen, you asked a question, I'm answering it. The Mets are what the Cubs should be. The Tigers are what the White Sox want to be.
So the Tigers are going to trade Scoble.
No.
That's what you just said.
No, but the White Sox have their version of Scoble. They do in Garrett Crochet. Cy Young caliber pitcher. Let him pitch more than four innings. See what you got. No, I am being facetious. And you don't. But if you're the White Sox, or you're a team that doesn't have star power or doesn't necessarily pay your players what the Mets pay their players, the Cubs pay their players, you find hope in Detroit. You find hope in this.
Let me ask you a question. What do you do with Javi Baez in that contract? Your roster right now is making $18 million, and you have gotten to the ALDS, right? Mm-hmm. Or ALCS now. What almost. What do you do with the guy that makes $25
million? Might be time to find a creative way to buy him out, to move on. I don't know that you bring him back. I don't know that you – it depends on what his health situation is.
Yeah.
A lot of factors.
It's crazy.
It's not to the point where – You feel like you need him back or want him back.
Pizzas.
That's a lot. A lot of Little Caesars.
That's
a lot of Little Caesars.
A lot of Little Caesars.
I don't know. But whatever they do with Javi Baez moving forward, the point being they're okay without him, and they have proven that. What is the Tigers' takeaway for teams like the White Sox?
Okay, we're going to have a moratorium on Sox talk because there is no comparison.
Okay.
They were the worst team ever.
Fine.
Like, there's no takeaway. They can't possibly get announced better because they can't even hire a manager. It's like saying that, if only they had Bobby Witt Jr., they'd definitely be. No. They're not Kansas City. They're not Detroit.
They're not next year.
They're a horrible thing.
They're not next year.
That somehow was allowed to happen.
I'll allow you that angst.
I'm sorry.
And that's an angsty moment. But
that
I will.
I
will point this out. And I'm not trying to be disingenuous. But I think when you look at the Sox, the problems are well stated, and the road is long and arduous. But they do have a young pitching foundation that you can build around. They do have pitching prospects that are highly rated by people who do this for a living. If you're Chris Getz, the only way you can look at the future without cringing is to look at the pitching prospects you have in Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith and Garrett Crochet and Jonathan Cannon and Drew Thorpe and all the guys. That's a good start, but there are others. And so if you build around young pitching, you look at what's happening with the Tigers example, the last 2 weeks, the last two games, they've shut out the Guardians. And you say, well, that's the way you're going to build. They need position players to add to that. I'm not going to try to convince you on the White Sox, but I do think that it's something to build on when you talk about the young pitching foundation. You got to start somewhere.
So let me ask you something. Just funny mirror look at the White Sox. If they had hired A.J. Hinch instead of Tony La Russa back in the day, would this have happened for them?
I think it's easy to conclude that they would be in a better situation right now, because what happened with Tony La Russa was the beginning of the end and the start of the demise. You can point to the season that he had that was enjoyable and all that, but I think that the dysfunction that was created internally within the organization was because of his hiring. And had the process been allowed to play out the way that Rick Hahn, who was, the guy in charge of making the process, choosing the manager, had that been allowed to play out? Yeah, I think we'd be a different reality right now on the South Side.
I just think it's a lot easier to look at the Cubs and say, oh, they could have been the Mets. If this guy had done this, or if that guy had gotten hot here, or if Grimes had thrown out the first pitch, they could have turned it into the Mets.
Clark, they need to get Clark, the Cub, more involved. I think it's a takeaway. The Mets have a greater mascot.
Then like Mr. Matt would have been the mascot. Grimes was an outside force came in, and you're not.
I know, but I'm talking about somebody wears a costume.
But it's a costume not of the organization.
Okay, so
Clark, if you made pants for Clark, is that what you're saying?
Yes, I'm saying that. Put on some pants, for goodness sakes. Then maybe you can get to the postseason. Have they made the postseason since Clark took his pants off?
Did he ever have them on?
I don't know.
What he's doing.
I don't know either. But, see, you're objecting to the idea that the Cubs could have been the Mets.
No. I'm saying that seems more viable than the Sox could have been Detroit. That's all I'm saying. I just think that the Sox are such an outlier at this point that there's no way for me to even if A.J. Hinch had been hired, I can't see. I think then all those players' careers would have to have turned out differently, and maybe they would.
Maybe they would have.
Maybe they would
have. Maybe the right manager would not have told them to take it easy running down to first base.
Yes.
Form bad habits that way.
Yes.
And your career takes a turn that way. And so we saw a lot of those careers take bad turns because of that approach.
That's fair.
So I think the right manager might have had a different result. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to sit here and I'm not waving the white flag with the flag for the White Sox. I'm waving the white flag.
The white flag was waved years ago.
I'm conceding.
That was a completely different season.
Yeah, it was. But I think that the playoffs have been so much fun, and I just wonder, is there what the best story is? It's a good debate. The Tigers or the Mets? I'll say the Tigers.
It's got to be the Tigers.
Yeah.
Just because of the, and you know what? I mean, conceivably, within 10 years, 5 years, whatever, you might say, wow, the Tigers were so loaded. How did we ever doubt that they wouldn't do that? You never know how these guys are going to turn out. But the anonymity of what they've done. Frankie Lindor was an all-star player whose meeting moments in the postseason or the last game of the year. Pete Alonso was an all-star player who met a moment. I'm just saying it's different than complete anonymity.
How many network TV executives are dreading a Detroit-San Diego World Series, and how many are relishing
San Diego has a
New
ton
York,
of stars.
New York?
They have a ton. Oh.
Subway Series.
No.
Or Dodgers Yankees. That'd be the better TV.
That's probably the better TV matchup. That's probably the TV.
Yeah. I love your reaction to Mets Yankees.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, that'd be awful. We've seen that before.
Poor John Heyman. I'll have to come on every day.
I know.
We have no one else would care, let alone know about it. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
As far as any of the ridiculous allegations out there, I'm not going to spend more than one sentence in response to it, and that is that I resent any of those accusations because they're patently false. And it's interesting the amount of power that people think that I have, which I don't, but I love Robert, and it was, one of those days yesterday.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is Aaron Rodgers. He was on the Pat McAfee Show saying that rumors of his involvement and anything to do with Robert Saleh. He doesn't know the man. He's never met him.
He loves the man, though. He loves him.
He does love him.
He resents the implication.
He resents the idea that...
You know how he had the most impact on that decision?
His interception.
He's been bad.
Yes.
He's been bad, and he has not been the quarterback that he was supposed to be. And had he been that quarterback, they would not be 2-3 and reeling by New York standards. This is so on brand for the Jets. This is so dysfunctional. And yeah, could he conceivably had a say in this? Perhaps. I really don't care what his role was in this, because I think you're not going to change your opinion of Aaron Rodgers. He's a diva. He's divisive. He's an easy guy to dislike. So
great, great radio guest with McAfee.
He is a great guest. I have to say And Pat McAfee does have some very good questions, even though they're buddies.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. I think, though, Woody Johnson sabotaged the season as much as Aaron Rodgers did with his bad play. You don't go into a season five games in and suddenly say, well, all right, 2-3, this is so bad it can't change. I don't know why. What you're you just waved the white flag. You surrendered. You forfeited the year. Because right now, an interim coach is going to have a bounce. I don't know. I don't think so.
Robert Saleh worked with the Flower back in the day
in the MAC.
In San Francisco.
Yes, but they were buddies going back to the Mid-American Conference, I believe.
He was the best man at the Flower's wedding.
What are you suggesting?
I'm saying he's kind of a flower bearer.
Ring bearer, flower girl.
Girl? Careful.
Yeah, I'm saying. I don't know what – that's a nice connection. I thought you were suggesting that maybe now Robert Saleh would be aligning himself with the
maybe
49ers.
Assistant head coach.
Do they need another defensive coordinator? How many defensive coordinators has he gone through? Kyle Shanahan, your
guy. Oh, no, they don't need another one. They could conceivably – he could go into Green Bay – you know, have complete anonymity. He wouldn't even have to show up in that godforsaken town, that frozen city.
Well, he has connections with San Francisco, but he also has a relationship with LaFleur.
I was suggesting
Green Bay, yes. San Francisco. He'll be other places. He's getting paid. Why would you want to work again this season?
Why
he's,
would you want to work in Green Bay?
They have a very good defensive coordinator paid. Right now.
Yes, and he's good friends with him. Former underling of his.
Do you think that the Jets firing Robert Saleh 5 games into the season will have an effect on any other franchise's decision to stick or fire their coach?
I don't.
How about Jacksonville?
No, I don't think so. I think that this is a situation. It's different than every other situation because of the level of expectations involving the quarterback. And I think that the Jets are Super Bowl or bust. I don't think the Jags are. I mean, could Doug Peterson get fired? Absolutely. Could anybody get fired in the NFL? Unquestionably, that you're hired to be fired, as the old adage goes. But I would be surprised to learn that some owner woke up like, oh, Woody fired him? Well, then I got to get rid of my guy.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it works that way.
I don't either. And I think that the Jets aren't, this isn't like other sports where you go get somebody at midseason and it changes the mood, it changes the culture, it changes everything about you. This isn't baseball.
I think it's interesting, David, because just looking at the names the Athletic listed as guys on the hot seat, would it surprise you if Kevin Stefanski got fired? Maybe it would be a bit of a surprise given the fact that the guy was so good last year and they won with 5 different quarterbacks and he, you know, got himself really righted the ship with Flacco. But to me, that problem, the problem in Cleveland, now I know their defense hasn't played well this year given all the talent they have, but the problem is the quarterback.
Yes, it is.
And that's – whose fault is that?
Not the coaches. You're talking about another dysfunctional organization.
Yes.
So would it surprise me? No. Would it be fair? Absolutely not.
Yes.
I would not fire Kevin Stefanski. He's the reigning coach of the year, isn't
he?
I know. So that would be ridiculous
to
say –
What about Peterson? Would that be a surprise if he got fired?
Again, you have an impulsive owner that's likely to pull the trigger way too early. There's no patience in the NFL any longer. So it wouldn't surprise me either. Would it be the right move? No, I don't think I would fire Doug Peterson because they're not getting the most out of Trevor Lawrence.
Could Nick Sirianni get fired?
It's Philadelphia. Absolutely.
Anything could happen in
Absolutely.
Philadelphia.
I think they'll give him the season, though. But if they struggle.
Could Mike McCarthy get fired?
Yes.
Any minute.
But he's been there long enough to expect more.
And Jerry is in charge.
Yeah, so there are some coaches there
that
are more likely to be fired or in jeopardy than Matt Eberflus.
I think the Flusie is most unlikely to be fired over any – the McCaskies have never fired a coach in season. I just don't think he belongs with that group.
I don't either.
And they're 3-2 right now. I mean, I guess if they lose this game and somehow – get beaten on the bye, then all of a sudden it's a different...
Well, that's tough. Yeah. It's tough. Those bye weeks can be challenging.
All right, we got to get to Brad Biggs. We're going to head to London and bring in our man, and we're going to talk all things English soccer with Biggsy. He's got a lot of reports. No, we're going to talk Bears, Bears, and Bears. Mully and Haw on the score.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.